Morning, everybody. Welcome to Friends Church. What a lovely day out, huh? And I got to say, huge respect for you all to come to the gym on a sunny day like today. It's beautiful out there, right? Okay, who was all here during our Love Your Neighbor with a Mental Illness series? Did anyone get to see? Totally blew my mind. That series is one of those ones that's changed me more than many of them. And at the time, I talked about this idea of externalizing mental illness, meaning my partner's not ill, but there's kind of like there's this thing that's something outside of them. So my partner's not doing it. It's the illness that's doing it. And I, based on the story from the Bible where a dad brings his son to Jesus and says, my son's, there's a demon trying to kill my son. And in his way of saying it, it's kind of like this mental illness is like a demon. I thought, what a brilliant idea. But there's part of that story I never told you guys because it didn't fit the series. But it's been like a worm in my head since then. Because the way it worked is the father brought the son to Jesus. That's the part of the story I told you. Before that, he brings the son to Jesus' students. And they're basically useless with it. And then Jesus says this line, kind of at the end of the story, he says, if you have faith, even the size of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain. And that line, like, I'd heard that line since I was a kid. If you have faith as big as a mustard seed, you can move a mountain. And in the way I understood it up until recently was, if I believe something that can't be proven to be true strong enough, then magic happens. Right? If I have enough faith in something, then something magical will happen and somebody will move a mountain for me. Now let me just set this in context. Today we're going to talk about kind of the hand we've all been dealt in life. And let's be honest, some of us have been dealt a tough hand. You know, I hear as people are walking in, they're like, I was like, hey, how's it going? They're like, you know, I've lost people to this recently and, you know, I got diagnosed with this and, you know, I'm struggling here and my family's this and financially this has happened to us and, oh yeah, I just got fired and it's kind of tough in life sometimes, isn't it? And the hand, what I mean, like the hand you were dealt is kind of like you get a set of cards when you're first born and you're playing out the cards the best you can. Some people just, the cards they were got dealt, I think are just tougher than others. And so I'm thinking about kind of the hand we've all been dealt. And thinking about that, and then I'm thinking about this Jesus story that says, if you have enough faith, you can move a mountain. Can you move the hand you were dealt then? Can you go from a really tough hand to magically it's not tough anymore? As you can see by my facial expression, I was like, that doesn't make a ton of sense, does it? So being the geeky guy I did, I went to the dictionary because that's what I do. And I went to a Greek dictionary, so it's extra geeky. And it's funny, you don't call a Greek dictionary a dictionary, you call it a lexicon, so you're extra smart, right? Silly. So I check out the Greek lexicon for this word. The word is pistis. It's the word we translate into faith. And it actually never means believing something that can't be proven to be true. It never means that. Even though that's kind of the folk definition in traditional Christianity. It means one of two things. Either I believe somebody else can do something, or it believes that I can do something. It'd be better translated faithfulness or commitment. And suddenly this idea that if I have enough faith, if I have enough commitment to something, I can move a mountain. And that blew my mind. And right away, I thought about a story of somebody in our community. We had had lunch a couple months earlier, and she was telling me her story, and I was like, you know, no disrespect, but you got a tough hand. The hand that you were dealt is tough. And yet I watched her day after day in the faithfulness of how she lived her life. Not faithfulness as in spiritual, but as in doing the things she needed to do to make a full life for herself. And I thought, that's the story I want to talk about today. And so today we're going to talk about what it means to have faith, not in the believing things kind of sense, but in the doing things kind of sense. And I want you to think about it in the context of the hand that you've been dealt. What can you do to impact the hand you've been dealt? So with that, let me introduce Sylvia. She's going to come join us. She talked to me the other day. Give her a big round of applause, everyone.
Sit?
Yeah, sit.
Great.
Welcome.
Thank you.
How's it going today?
Good. It's sunny out.
It is sunny out. I had all the blinds closed, and somebody was kind of giving me this like, this space doesn't feel very good. So we opened it all up, got some sunshine in here. Feels much nicer, doesn't it?
I agree. Thank you, whoever that was.
I won't point her out, but she's smiling right now. So where are you from? Where were you born?
Cape Breton.
Cape Breton.
Yes.
Where's
East
that?
Coast. Tip of Nova Scotia.
Tip of Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
So it's not like Newfoundland?
Just no.
Everything in the East Coast?
No, I'm not a Newfie. I'm a Cape Breton.
Just checking. Clearly, I'm not from there, so the whole thing's Newfoundland to me.
No.
Married?
Yes. To Doug.
To Doug. Yeah. We like Doug. Hey, Doug. Children?
Yes, one.
Okay. Siblings?
One twin sister.
Twin sister?
Yes.
Identical? Fraternal?
Fraternal. She does not have this.
Gotcha. Now, today we're going to talk a little bit about, she just waved at her leg, this.
Yeah.
Obviously, you limp. You're wearing a brace.
I do.
What's going on?
I have a condition called Klippel-Trenaunay syndrome, also known as KT syndrome.
Say that one again.
Klippel-Trenaunay syndrome.
And what is that?
It's a vascular malformation present at birth, but it is not genetic. It's genetic, but not hereditary.
Okay.
So everything's messed up, in layman's terms.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you go to the doctor, they just say it's all messed up.
No, I go to the doctor and I explain it all to them because they don't know it.
So it's pretty rare.
Yes.
How many people have it?
Not too many. It does classify under the rare disease category.
So how many is that?
I think it's less than maybe 100,000 in the world.
100,000 in the world?
On the east coast of Canada and the United States, there's 8 cases.
Eight.
Minus one because I'm out here now.
So there's 7 cases.
So 7
cases.
Now. Yeah, 7 now. Because I'm here.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is it life-threatening?
It can be. Some people live into their 60s. Some people don't live past 4.
Wow. So when you say it's a vascular disease,
So the main veins and arteries haven't formed properly, and I have lots of superficial veins and arteries that function like a normal person's veins and arteries would.
Okay.
Which causes lymphedema, so that's why I wear a compression garment, because if I stand up without it.
What did you say?
Lymphedema.
Well, I feel like I'm in school today, doesn't it? Lymphedema means it swells?
Lymphedema means the blood will go down into the leg, but it won't come back out.
Ah.
So then it just swells up, and then blood rushes down trying to compensate. And
so what would happen if you took the brace off right now?
Compression garment? Sitting down, I'd be okay. If I stood up and walked to the back, someone might get vomited on. Plain and simple.
So vomit and then down.
Yeah.
And you're out.
Yeah.
Wow. What's the earliest memory of realizing that your life is a bit different than the people around you?
The earliest memory I have or the earliest memory that's been told to me?
What's your earliest memory?
It was brownies, my first year of brownies. So I would have been about 5 or 6.
Okay.
And we were into October because we were at our Halloween party and we were all dressed up and all the little girls were running around and playing tag. And there I am sitting and I'm like, I don't like this. I can't keep up with you people. This is no fun.
And it's just, you couldn't run?
No, I couldn't run. I still, if you see me running, seriously run, because there's a bear coming, I don't run. Mm. It's a sad story. it was definitely one of those moments where it was like, oh, I don't want to be here. This isn't fun. This isn't good. I'm not like them.
Ah, I am other than them.
Yes.
Have you let it hold you back a whole lot?
I haven't. I think that's because my mother and my sister wouldn't let me.
What do you mean?
When my mom always tells a story about how late I was walking.
Okay.
And my sister was really early, and she would just run up and down the halls, and she would just grab me by the arm and drag me with her. And so it was either a get up and walk or be dragged behind her.
Okay.
But in hindsight, I did not walk late. I was only like 14 months old when I walked.
Don't you get a pass for having like a CT syndrome or whatever?
KT.
KC, sorry.
That's okay.
I'm going to say the other word. Yeah.
When your sister walks at 6 months old, it's like, whoa, you're late.
Wow.
But she's a freak of nature. She walked early.
So tell me, when the doctors, your mom had you, obviously twins, you have a twin sister. What did the doctor say to your mom?
Right away, nothing, because they had no idea.
Okay.
So we were born in a small town in Cape Breton, and they, it was the 80s, so it was a section. And when my mom came out of surgery, they told her that the doctors from Halifax were on their way. Ooh. Because one of the babies wasn't okay. And, so then the doctors arrived and basically told my mom I wouldn't sit up, I wouldn't walk, and that it was going to be a miserable life.
Wow. That's tough news. I remember when we first talked about it, you said they actually even said possibly...
that her raising us wasn't the best idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So here you are, walking, sitting up.
Yeah.
What changed? How did you get to this point?
I don't think my mom ever really believed the doctor knew what he was talking about. I guess.
This is before Google even.
Yeah, and I think that was probably a good thing.
How so?
Because there was no Google and there was no internet telling her how I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And she watched her other baby do it all, so she's like, why can't she? Hmm. Can she try?
And what do you mean? So you just, everything was like, well, try. If it goes well, it goes well. If it doesn't go well, then we'll call it.
We'll take you to the hospital and get you stitched up or get a cast put on you.
I love it. So what's some things that they never thought you'd do that you've been able to do?
Well, they told me I would never walk.
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, I did my first 5K.
Nice.
And then sitting for any amount of time would be unheard of.
Okay. Riding a bike? You ride a bike, don't you?
I do ride a bike, yeah. Riding a bike is actually one of the best things. It's easy. It's less impact on the knee.
Oh, nice.
They probably would have told my mom I couldn't ski or skate or anything like that.
You can ski?
Not well, but yes.
I can't ski well
either. I don't know.
Either.
Skiing into a tree, is that skiing? I don't know. But I've done it.
Hmm.
I probably will never do it again.
Okay.
But I have done it.
I want to know how that conversation went. Like, Mom, I want to go skiing. What did she say?
I don't remember there being a conversation. I just brought home my permission form, and my sister brought home her permission form, and we're like, class is going skiing. And she's like, I don't know if you should ski. Can we ask your doctors? And ask the doctors, and the doctor was like, oh, I don't know. She might break herself. My mom's like, okay.
Somehow I love your mom for some reason right now. I think she's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, obviously it would have been tough. Single mom, raising two kids.
Yeah.
Now, help me out, because vocabulary is important. Do you call this a condition? Do you call this an illness? Do you call this...
I don't really know what to call it. I usually just call it a bad leg.
Okay.
I don't... It's a syndrome, by definition. Okay. A condition to me sounds like a cold that's got you in bed. I don't know.
Doesn't feel like it's the right answer.
No, I don't feel like there is a right tag to put on it.
Okay, it's, I have a bad leg.
I have a bad leg. It's big and it's purple.
Huh.
Yeah.
So kind of tell me a bit of your family life. So single mom, two kids, you have a bad leg.
Yeah. For a while, when I was really little, we lived with my grandparents, my mom's mom and dad.
Okay.
And so we were pretty much raised with mom, granny, daddy, who's my grandfather.
Okay.
And then when we were 15, my stepdad moved in with us. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think he might have been a little crazy, but that's probably why he stayed with us.
So in the past, they've talked about pretty extreme ways of handling your condition.
Yes.
What was kind of on the worst case scenario?
So usually when a baby is born with this condition I have, the first discussion is around amputation. There wasn't a discussion when I was born, I think because the doctors had no clue what they were dealing with. They went to medical books to find out what I had. So when I was 7, the conversation came up because I was having lots of issues about amputation.
Okay.
And the doctor looked at my mom and said, like, this is the point in her life. You need to make a decision whether or not we're going to amputate her leg.
Wow.
Yeah.
And don't just leave us hanging.
My mom looked at me and she was like, I can't decide to cut off a 7-year-old's leg. Anybody who knows a 7-year-old, they're pretty rambunctious. They like to keep moving and they have opinions and minds of their own at that point. I don't remember the conversation at the doctor's,
okay.
But I do remember driving weeks, months, I don't know, could have been the next day, over through our neighborhood, and we were driving over the train tracks, and I was sitting in the back seat, and I said to my mom, I really don't want them to cut my leg off. Wow. And she's like, what? And I was like, I don't want them to just cut off my leg. I have two legs. Why would I cut one off? Mm. Some people have no legs. They would love some legs. Mm. So
she told the doctor no. That's a pretty intense conversation to have at 7 years old.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine having a conversation like that with my 7 year old.
How old's Quentin?
Seven.
Seven.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So that's the same age.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This obviously still impacts you because 7 years ago, I got a call from your husband.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about when Quentin was born?
So I guess to preface that, I was always told because of my condition, I would never have a baby.
Okay.
I would never get pregnant. Quentin was a very pleasant surprise to us. Mm-hmm. And the pregnancy was okay. It wasn't the best. It wasn't as bad as I had imagined it could have been.
Okay.
The delivery was a different story. I had a C-section under general anesthetic because of my condition,
okay.
meaning that bleeding was high risk. Mm. And so I went into labor on August 27th and had doctors and anesthesiologists look at me and say, but you're not supposed to go into labor. Well, thanks, but I didn't make this decision. So we go into the hospital and they get me all prepped for the OR, and I've been through I don't know how many surgeries, so I think it's no big deal.
Yeah, like you've broken your leg how many times?
Like 13, 14, I don't know, 15. I don't know, a lot. And I've had surgeries beyond that. So when it comes to being in hospitals and doctors and ORs, it's not a big deal for me.
Right.
I'm pretty low-key about it. Doug is not so much. He's watching his wife go in for a major surgery, and
yeah.
he knows all the risks, and he is the person that like lays it all out and looks at it. And so I went into the OR, I went to sleep, and 12 hours later I woke up, and in between those 12 hours of me going to sleep, they delivered Quentin, and he was happy and a healthy 6 pound 3 ounce little boy. Perfect. And they came out and just basically told Doug that I was bleeding. They didn't know why, and they'd be back in a little bit. And hours go by, and they don't show back up. And they come back, and they're like, Sylvia's spleen is ruptured. We're trying to save it. We don't know what we can do. And Doug's trying to get any information they can. And they basically just tell him, we don't have any other information. And he's like, is she going to be okay? They're like, we don't have any other information. And so hours and hours later, again, they come back and say, we couldn't save her spleen. Mm-hmm. It ruptured. We had to take it out. We gave her 7 units of blood so far, which if anyone medically knows anything, that's an entire person. And so 7 units of blood. And at that point, they still didn't know what was going to happen.
So they were just, you were on, like, you could pass?
Could have been, yeah.
Wow. And for you, you just went to sleep and woke up?
Yeah.
How was Doug when you woke up?
I didn't see Doug right away when I woke up. I woke up in recovery, and they said to me, I just looked down, and I expected to wake up with an IV and maybe an oxygen tube in my nose, because that's usually typical, and I had about 10 tubes coming in and out of me, and I was like, What happened? The nurse said there was some complications, and when I heard complications, I thought baby complications. And I was like, what? Where's my baby? And she's like, he's okay. There's some complications. We're probably going to have to take you up to ICU. And I was like, no, you can't do that. Like, you cannot take me to ICU. My husband's going to lose his mind. You can't take me there. And I guess it was still a few hours after that, because they did another bag of blood, that I ended up in my room. And I don't remember Doug coming the first time.
Okay.
I vaguely remember him bringing Quentin, but I was
pretty out of it.
Lots of heavy painkillers and narcotics for the next like 2 or 3 days. There's okay. not a whole lot I remember about those days.
Wow. Well, I heard from your husband. He was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
He lived a whole life, your whole lifetime in that few hours. So this condition, this bad leg, it's it's pretty big in your life.
Yeah, it's pretty defining.
Yeah.
Part of me.
I'm going to maybe take a little, I just want everyone to hear the story. Tell me when you realized you loved Doug.
So I don't know how long we had been dating exactly, but I was having a really bad leg day, and we had a two-level home at that time, and our TV room was in the basement, and so we were in the basement, and I went to get up off the couch, and I just couldn't put weight down, I couldn't straighten my leg. It's not uncommon for me to just stand up and be like, oh, no, can't go anywhere, I just have to sit back down. Mm-hmm. And Doug was like, well, you can't just sleep on a couch in the basement. And I was like, well, I can't walk. I don't have my crutches here. Those are my options. Okay. And so I was like, why don't you go get my medication?
Okay, wait a second. Are you guys living together now? Are you dating still?
Yeah, we were living together.
Okay.
And I was like, bring my medication down, give it a few hours, see if I can get upstairs then.
Right.
And so I couldn't. No, we couldn't have been living together yet. I don't know.
It's all good.
Is that an important part of the story?
I don't know. I apologize.
And so I still couldn't get up. And Doug was like, well, I'm not going to leave you sleep in the basement. Our basement at the time wasn't finished. It was cold. And so he literally picked me up and carried me up the basement to the main floor, and then from the main floor up to our bedroom.
Okay.
And I'm not like 50 pounds or anything. So he carried me up, and I laid in bed, and I was like, okay, this is a person who can actually take care of me, and that is going to be okay with it. And I looked at him, and I was like, I love you. And he was like, I love you, too. I was like, no, don't say that.
Did you say it with that tone of voice? I love you. Like,
yeah. No, well, I was high painkillers.
Okay.
Good painkillers. So I might have. I don't know.
Okay.
Painkillers.
But that was the moment you knew that he was the right guy.
I called my mom the next day and told her I was going to marry him.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, present day, your son's 7, he's awesome, smarter than most of us.
Yes, smarter than me, for sure.
It's good and bad, isn't it? Your leg still kind of takes rounds out of you pretty regularly,
mm-hmm.
puts you in the hospital pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with it? Because the last time you didn't call me and I got very cross with you.
That's not my job, it's Doug's.
No, that's your job.
It's Doug's job. I'm busy healing.
Okay. Doug, we'll talk after.
So because I have no spleen, and because of the condition, the skin on the leg is very fragile.
Okay.
And I get cellulitis infections. The first major cellulitis infection turned septic very quickly.
Wow.
Which, again, being someone who's in and in the hospital, I'm just like, it'll be fine. And I found out a few days after I came home from the hospital, my aunt had lost a best friend to a septic infection.
Wow.
Who was a relatively healthy woman in her 40s.
Okay.
And so that kind of really hit home.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, Quentin's in school, and so there's definitely things he does that I miss if I'm in the hospital, which is hard.
Because you're in chunk, you're for like a week, 2 weeks, like you're in big chunks in there.
The longest was 16 days.
Wow.
And then usually it's about a week.
Okay.
If I don't convince them to send me home with my little backpack of meds.
Okay.
Yeah.
The hand, so I hope this is okay for me to say, but your hand feels like it's a tough hand. The hand you were dealt, like having a bad leg, and particularly this bad leg, seems like it's a tough hand.
Yeah, if it was a poker hand, I'd have a good bluffing face, because it'd be pretty.
How do you do a day? And like, there's some days where you can't stand up. Some days, how do you stay Sylvia? Like the Sylvia that we know, which is outgoing and.
But you don't see the Sylvia that has a bad day.
Okay.
Because she's home in bed and she can't get up.
What do you do when you have those days?
It's hard. I rely a lot on Doug. Mm-hmm. I rely a lot on Quentin. It's hard. I don't know how to explain it. It's like a 180 from my day in the life of Sylvia outside is a 180 from the day in the life of Sylvia in the house.
Huh. What do you tell yourself in those days when it's hard? When it's just, I can't get out of bed? What is your mental game like?
It depends on how bad the pain is and how long it's been.
Okay.
If it's one day in bed, it's easy enough to say it's okay. Tomorrow will be better. But when tomorrow isn't better, it's harder.
Okay. And yet you always come back to Sylvia.
There's no other option.
There's no just laying in bed and giving up?
No, I have a baby and a husband. I have a lot in my life that people would love to have. And so, they keep me going.
Let's just say a miracle happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug let you get pregnant again. And you could do it. And you had a baby. And they have the same syndrome as you.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell your baby?
I don't know if I would necessarily tell them anything right off the bat. But, you know, I think I would be... I'd want to be the best example. Mm. I would want to show them that, yeah, there's bad days, but there's good days. Mm. And getting out of bed for those good days is worth it. Mm. But it might be hard, but you can do it.
Mm.
You can get up.
There's also almost a story of the doctor told you you'll never sit up, you'll never walk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's been telling you, you can't, you can't, you can't. And yet, in spite of all the times you can't, there's so much you can do.
Yeah.
What was your line when you were 7? Well, people would die for 2 legs. I got 2 legs.
Would.
Why would we do this?
They would. And anytime someone looks at me and they're like, oh, that's terrible. I'm like, what's terrible? That I have 2 legs that on a regular, semi-regular basis function.
Okay.
And I think being in the hospital so much when I was a kid, I was in the hospital with little kids who had no legs or little kids that were going through chemo treatment. And I always looked at them and I was like, it could be that. It could be worse.
So for you, there's always, it could have been a worse hand.
It could have been.
This is the hand I was dealt. I'll play it the best I can. I'll play it for the people I love. I'll play it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good way to end it. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you.
Man, I got choked up on that one too. I don't know what hand we're all dealt. Some of us got dealt a good hand. Some of us, I don't know how it gets handed out, which hand you get. Today, I just wanted you guys to think through how you can engage with the hand that you were dealt. Every time I see Sylvia and she's smiling at me and laughing and cracking a joke, and I just think, I don't even know what's happened the last couple of days, but she can get here. To me, that's that idea of faithfulness can move mountains. After, you know, 16 days in the hospital, I would be losing my mind. And yet she comes out, she's joking with me, she'll send me texts that are cracking jokes. So I don't know what hand you were dealt. I don't know what faithfulness looks like for you. Not faithfulness of belief, but this idea of, you know, her mental game has got to just be bulletproof, doesn't it? To get back on that again, going, no. I want to live for my husband and my kids and the people I love in my life. So I don't want this story to shame you. I don't want this story to be anything like that. I want it to engage that spiritual side of us that says, how do I keep on? How do I keep doing the healthy things that I need to do in my life to play the hand that I was dealt? And how do I need to do it for the people around me, the people I love, and the people I don't even know yet? So I'm going to have them play just a little bit of music while I end here. Just sit for a second. Just sit with the story. Think of the hand that you were dealt. Think of what it looks like to do the things you need to do to stay healthy through that. I just want to encourage you this summer to set your intention to say, I will continue to do it. Yeah, I'm going to fall off the wagon sometimes. You know, there's probably days where you're bawling your eyes out and you can't even, you know. And yet tomorrow will be a new day. Tomorrow I'll fight again. I would encourage you to keep up the good fight. Because I think there's some wisdom that says faithfulness can move mountains. And I think some of us have some mountains we need to move today. So just take some time when you're ready. We'll dismiss. Don't feel like you need to leave. Hang out. Visit. Let kids run around. Have fun. Whatever we need to do. Let's just take a little minute here to just kind of center ourselves, okay? Have a great week. See you next week, everyone.